actions for these specific purchases, and if we have more, we'll bring them back again. So it's just those purchases that were noted, and again, we'll get you a detailed list, but essentially the ones that we just spoke of, to just ratify our actions, and then finance will have to approve it as well.
Doing is just buying the actions of you to purchase these items.
Correct, yep.
Can I get a motion?
I have a question, Tom Ryan. Is there a dollar limit on the requests, or a minimum, maximum?
No, so we're using our best judgment. So the most expensive thing that we bought were the N95s for about $4,500, and those vials and swabs for about $5,000-$6,000. Obviously, you know, we're using discretion. We wouldn't be purchasing, you know, a box truck or anything for 30, 40 grand. We're just, you know, certainly, I think the high end of these supplies that we would buy are probably that $5,000, $6,000 range.
Fred Potter, question?
Finance committee makes the final decision.
Right.
Okay.
This is Aaron Mullen. Can I ask a question?
Yeah.
It's unrelated to the purchase, but what is the plan for how they're going to be filled? Is that going to be? Utilize people who aren't able to work as much in the office now? Or are you going to have a bunch of people together? Hopefully not. What's the plan?
As far as distributing these supplies?
I thought that you were purchasing smaller bottles to fill with the larger front with the hand sanitizer from these larger bottles.
Right. And as requests come in for hand sanitizer, like a local fire department, if a local fire department says, you know, I need hand sanitizer, we can fill 6 or 8 bottles and then give them some 1 gallon bottles, and then they can go off and do what they need to do. It's not going to be where we're going to have a bunch of people filling these bottles up and distributing all these small bottles. We'll give them the small bottles. We'll give them the gallon jugs and say, here you go, go and do what you got to do with them.
And also, yeah, Tim utilizes, we've utilized his radio technicians. They're still working on radio stuff, but they also help with kind of and the deputy fire coordinators for supply, pickup, in some cases delivery as well.
Okay, so could I get a motion to bring this on the table?
Fred Potter, move it.
I'm Ryan, second.
Okay.
Quick question. Have you found that the prices you've had to pay for these items are escalated significantly over what they normally would be?
Oh yeah, absolutely. And because it's counties bidding against each other, bidding against states, bidding against the federal government too. So yes, it's more than we would pay under normal circumstances, and all the other counties that we talked to are in the same boat. And if they can get their hands on them, they're paying the premium too, just because it's eventually going to be reimbursed by FEMA. And, you know, we need these supplies on hand if we can get them.
One of the other things that, you know, we're finding is we just go to the normal regular suppliers that we would normally deal with on these items, and they don't have them, and they don't know when they're going to get them. And so we've really ended up having to pay what the market price is at the time.
This is all reimbursed by FEMA.
Yes, it should be reimbursed by FEMA, yes. Because it's listed as an emergency purchase as part of the COVID-19 fight.
And they're doing all the things that FEMA required. So Kenny's tracking down 3 quotes, even though some of them are going to be astronomical, just so that we have all of the information back up. So when it's submitted to FEMA, we won't have run into any of those roadblocks.
A lot of the issues that we find is when we go looking for quotes on this stuff, the suppliers just don't have it. So our quote is, it's not available. So we have to buy it from the vendor that we can buy it from.
Well, and that's important that we get this stuff in supply so that we can distribute it. So
absolutely. Very robust distribution plan that both Ken Ferenz from my office and Matthew Marmore from the Public Health Department work on. And they've done a tremendous job on identifying what resources are coming in, what requests are being made, what the burn rates are for the hospitals, the nursing homes, the EMS and law enforcement and fire agencies, what they're burning at a rate, and so that we can give them to the people that need them at the moment.
Anything else?
So this is Hilda. Can I ask a question? So did that include, I can't remember, Tim, did you include gowns in the order as well?
We have some gowns right now, but we are looking for new gowns. One of the things we've done with gowns is the state has identified the fact if we can't get specific isolation gowns, that they can use fabric gowns. So we're working right now between the Office for the Aging RSVP program. They've identified some volunteers that are willing to sew gowns. They have a pattern that they've identified, and they're actually having folks make gowns. They're going to distribute them through the Office for the Aging and bring them to us, and then we can distribute them out of here, out of the stockpile.
Awesome. Thanks.
But we are still looking for the specific isolation gowns. That's one of our high priority levels right now is gowns. We don't have enough.
Has any of this government itself?
Yeah, we did receive two pushes from the Strategic National Stockpile that came through the state. And the materials that we got here in Steuben County were very minuscule. You know, certainly New York City, Long Island has a much, harder fight than we do right now. And I think a lot of the supplies are still getting pushed down there, rightfully so. But, for us right now, I'm on a supply call with the state every single day at 2:30, and they have no information on when we're going to get another push from the Strategic National Stockpile. So right now, what we have is what we have. So we have to go to battle and win the rest of this war on the materials that we have right now or what we can acquire. So that's why this emergency purchase is so important right now, because if we identify items that we need to be able to buy them and get them here so that we, can go into the next battle, equipped.
Thanks. Anything else? We have a motion and a second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Motion carried. Thanks, Tim.
That's all for me, folks. Thank you so much for your support. We appreciate you guys thinking of us, and we're here getting it done.
Thank you. All right. Is the sheriff here?
I'm here.
You're up.
This is probably the most quiet you've ever had me at a meeting, I think, today. I had you on mute for most of it. I have a uniform bid, and I hope Andy's on the call because I don't have the information, but we did our normal every other year uniform bid, and I think it went to four different vendors. Andy, are you out there? Apparently not.
It's not. We don't know what the bids are.
No, I haven't seen them. I just know that they're in.
Brenda, I'll try and get him on the call if you want to just continue on with the rest.
So how about the milk?
Okay. That we did last month. We don't need to redo it.
All right. So then we've got Grant, State Farm Grant.
Yep. The undersheriff wrote a grant with State Farm in order to create, it's called the Amy Stock Trailer out of Albany, where a young lady that was involved in a fatal crash due to an intoxicated driver, they made a education platform with a trailer that houses the vehicle that was crashed along with the 911 calls and everything involved with that. John wrote a grant to State Farm to try and duplicate that here with the rise in fatal crashes we've had over the last 2 years to try and use that as an education material in the high schools. And State Farm is going to give us up to, or going to send us a check for $24,750 to start us on that path to buy a trailer in order to use one of the vehicles from one of our crashes and develop a similar trailer to the Amy Stock trailer. So I'm looking for permission to receive that $24,750.
This is a trailer that we're going to sit out there and haul a crashed vehicle on for education?
Yes. Well, it's not just haul it on. It sets it up so that it's an interactive educational trailer for when we do the prom, when we do all the prom training and all of that to try and stop our high school kids from driving intoxicated, crashing, and dying. That's the purpose of it. It won't just have a car sitting on the back of it. It'll be a full production.
Fred Potter, question?
Yeah.
The budget request is $25,000 instead of the $24,750. Is there additional $250 of equipment that you're going to be getting?
No, this was, we were told we were going to get $25,000, so that's what we did. And then the last email we got from State Farm said it's going to be $24,750. So we're looking to change it to $24,750.
Okay.
I'm assuming there's got to be some insurance costs putting this vehicle on the road. So I'm assuming we have enough in your budget to cover that.
Yes. Well, as we go forward, we won't negatively impact the budget, and we'll continue to look for other grants as we put this together.
Okay. Have a motion?
Jeff Horton, I'll make the motion.
Second. Fred Potter, I'll second it.
Any further?
Can I ask a question? This is Hilda.
Go ahead, Hilda.
So for Jim, we've talked about this at Prevention Coalition, and I know we've mm-hmm. talked about trying to get that trailer that to come here and how expensive it was, so we didn't do it. But I would suggest, or I would ask, to make sure when you do this to work with Prevention Coalition, because I think we've got a lot of contacts that might be able to help to get this thing going.
Absolutely, thank you,
Carol. Have a question. Would we be able to let other counties utilize this trailer and car as well?
Yeah, the plan would be to use it exactly like the Amy Stock trailer, where it goes out through the Stop DWI coordinator network, and any county can request it through Stop DWI, and we would absolutely share it with anyone that needed it.
Thank you.
I have another question, please. So Jim, that's not enough. I'm trying to remember what the cost was if we were going to do it ourselves back last year. And it seemed like it was a lot more money than that.
It could be. I said, again, as we do this, we'll continue to ask for grants and other funding sources to make sure that we're not negatively affecting the budget.
Is it an enclosed trailer or an open trailer?
We haven't bought it yet, so I would assume it'll be an enclosed trailer. That's the way the Amy Stock trailer is. It's actually a custom trailer, the way that one works.
And the sides open up in order to see the vehicle.
Yes. Yeah, and it's got speakers and lights and everything else in it.
And what are you going to tow it with?
We've got a our boat patrol pickup truck, which is an F-250.
Okay.
I think you can go online and see it too.
An enclosed trailer, a 22-foot Hallmark is about $7,000. So this would have to be a custom one in order to spend that much money.
So basically,
well, again,
all we're doing here is accepting the money I'm assuming that if we get out, if we go out there and buy a trailer, we're going to have to sit out there and bid that out.
Yes.
So we'll have more information when that happens. So this is just to accept the $25,000.
Fred Potter, I'll move it.
I already have a motion and a second, I believe. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Okay, so we're back to the uniform bid. Sandy here yet?
Yes, I am.
So you have the information on the uniform bid?
Yes. There's like 30 line items on this bid. We awarded to 4 separate vendors based on a line item basis. So whoever the low was the awardee.
Okay. I have a motion.
I'm Ryan.
Second?
I'll second.
Any further discussion?
Was there an increase in cost from last year?
They were fairly comparable. I would say within 5%.
Okay, anything else? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. So we have one other item, James.
Two more.
Okay, two more. All right, go ahead.
renewal of the SRO contracts. The SRO contracts, I'm not sure that we need any action on this as I look at the original resolution, but I wanted to make sure everybody was aware. There was a change in the education law last year, which made it necessary for us to include language in the SRO contracts outlining the SRO's role in a disciplinary hearing or in doing discipline. And the language that we have added, it's gone through Jen, she's approved it, is that basically discipline is the purview of the school district and the SROs will continue to engage in criminal investigations and only act within that scope. The other change is that before the salary for the SROs was capped at $30,000 because that was the limit under the retirement system. Last year, they passed a bill to raise that, and it was signed by the governor to raise that ceiling to $35,000. So the schools have all agreed to that increase and will reimburse accordingly. So the pay is going to go up for the SRO slightly so that they can max out at $35,000 a year rather than $30,000 a year. So again, I don't see where that does anything to the original resolution, but I wanted to make sure everybody was aware of it and that if in fact Jen thinks there is a any action that needs to be taken, we did so.
Fred Potter, question?
Yep.
While the schools have been closed all these weeks, are the SROs continuing to be paid?
Yes.
Okay, that brings me to this. Okay, go ahead.
They're being paid, again, reimbursed. So some school districts have their SROs coming in, helping with food distribution and home visits. Others have the SROs coming in part-time, and some want to pay them to stay home so that they secure those SROs return after this is done.
Okay, that brings me to my second question. With the governor's budget, school aid to the school districts has been frozen to what it was during this current fiscal year. And was the agreement to increase the salary made before the governor's budget was released or before the budget was passed by the state or after?
Before.
I'm thinking the districts are going to be looking at ways they can conserve and save money anywhere as they can. So before I would vote for the increase, I want to make sure that the schools were okay with it.
We've reached out to every superintendent and they've all approved it. So when we originally put this together, I haven't contacted them since COVID, but they were all on board a month ago when this was first looked at.
Okay, I got a question. So I understand there's a bill, there was a law that authorized the salaries to $35,000, but who sets the salary?
No, we set the salary. So what the law did was it raised the ceiling that a person with who is retired can still earn within the system without penalty.
Okay, I understand that there that those raises are authorized are allowed so they don't have a retirement issue.
Right.
But who decides how much they actually get paid?
So that's a number that is derived from 30,000 minus their workman's comp and any other monies that the county would have to take. It reduces it by that amount, and then it breaks down to an hourly wage for the 10-month school district.
So, well, I guess my
the count.
You folks said it. The county sends it.
Okay, so that's what I'm getting. So just because they are allowed to earn $35,000, by what mechanism are we now increasing their salary to $35,000? Is this what this vote is doing?
Through contract that and through contract with the school districts where they agree to pay that amount.
Okay, so are we approving a contract raising salaries to $35,000 from $30,000?
Yes. If I can, this is Jen. Can you guys hear me?
Yes.
So it's a contractual obligation, Steve. The school districts are paying us that amount via the contract that they, as the sheriff just described, approved, along with the new language that's required in the education law. So it's not money coming out of the county. It's coming into the county from the schools.
Okay, so the schools have agreed that $35,000 is the right salary, and we're just the sort of the mechanism by which that's accomplished. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay. Did we lose Malter? No, he's on mute.
No, I don't see him anymore.
Yeah, he's there.
Am I there now?
You're there now. Okay. Yep.
Okay, so based on what you're saying, the state only allows retired people to make $30,000 a year. This allows them to make up to $35,000. It just increases the amount that they can make without affecting their pension. Is that correct?
That is correct.
So we're really not raising anybody's salary at this point. We're just sitting out there, and the state's the one that is doing this. Are we just sitting out there ratifying that the schools can pay people up to $35,000 a year?
Well, it's contract renewal time, so we're putting that into these contracts. So it's just a renewal of all the SRO contracts at the new amount that the state has increased with the new language that is required under the education law.
So I guess it's up to the schools whether they want to pay these people this additional money. So,
correct.
So based on where the state budget is at this point, I don't know why anybody would be increasing anything.
Agreed.
Well, for on that,
I'd rather pay an SRO than I would another administrator in a school district. So maybe they'll smarten up.
Agree.
The feedback I've gotten from every administrator is they're more than happy to pay this. It's still half of what they would pay otherwise. So they're more than willing to do what they need to do to keep that protection in their district.
So each of these contracts we now have needs to be modified. That's what we're dealing with, Jen.
Yes, he and Terry at the sheriff's office and myself have come up with a new template. The sheriff and undersheriff have seen the language. Everybody's in agreement with it. It basically increases the scope of duties of the SRO significantly, just because we have to spell out what they can and can't do. So we already have the first two done as a template. So we should be good as long as you guys are okay with us.
Are we doing this as of the next fiscal school year? Starts in September.
Yeah, I think, and Sheriff, you can correct me. I don't have one in front of me, but I think it's July, or they're up for renewal here this summer. It's a different schedule.
They get renewed in the summer for implementation in September.
Did I get a motion from anybody?
I'm Ryan. I'll move it.
Have a second.
I'll second.
This is really not any additional money that's going to cost the county, so it's up to the schools whether they want to pay it or not. So all those in favor?
Aye.
Motion carried. Next.
One more live scan grant. The live scan is the digital fingerprint system that is in the jail, in the deputy's room, and in the county office building. It's aging. We got a grant, but it's a matching grant for $30,000 to replace it. My plan would be, if you're okay with accepting it, put that in the budget for next year, the matching part, and there'd be no purchase unless it makes it through next year's budget. But we have to let them know if we're willing to accept it at this point in time. Through the state, through DCGS.
Well, I don't have a problem with that. Do I have a motion?
Fred Potter, I'll move it.
I'll second it.
Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried.
John, this is Gary Twack.
Go ahead, Gary.
I got two questions for the sheriff. One is, are we having the officers in the jail wear masks or anything at this point?
Some do and some don't. So if you want me to take 10 minutes and explain everything we're doing in the jail, I can. Or if you'd rather contact me one-on-one, I can do that.
Let's go to my second question is, what's the road patrol doing these days?
Well, a lot of what they're doing is helping public health out right now. They're doing all the checks on the quarantine folks in order to help public health. Last weekend, we were at both Walmarts, making sure that there were no issues there with the scaling back. And they're continuing to run calls and continuing to provide public safety throughout the county. We're still making arrests. We're still doing everything they have to do. Obviously, they can't do that with social distancing. So we're trying to do it as safely as we possibly can. And I just heard today that Wayne County has an entire shift on quarantine because they had an infected deputy. We're trying to avoid that.
Oh, boy. Yeah.
Sheriff Tom Ryan, can I ask a question?
Sure.
What will be the protocol if we have a case in the jail of COVID-19? Are we going to keep them in the house, let them go?
All that depends on whether or not they're sentenced or pre-sentenced. If they're sentenced, we can't let them go. If they're pre-sentenced and it makes sense, we can work something out through the DA's office and the judges and the public defender. Currently, we're extremely fortunate that we have prime care in place now. I can't tell you what a deal changer that is. They went through H1N1. Their protocols are set. The guidance they've given us is directly in line with CDC. and the protocols that they're using are. Right now we have two units set up as intake units. Any new person that is remanded to the jail goes in one of those units in a semi-isolated state, and they remain in that state until prime care clears them as asymptomatic, and then they move into into a housing unit. Those people are screened twice a day and checked twice a day for symptoms. If they do show any symptoms, they'll stay in isolation. Once they've met that 10-day mark with no symptoms and prime care feels confident that they are not a carrier or are completely asymptomatic, then they're moved into population. Should we have a person who does exhibit signs and then test positive, that entire housing unit will go into isolation and quarantine until we're through that. The deputies that work the intake, some wear masks, some do not, depending on whether someone is showing symptoms or any issues they have what they bring in with them. We have masks available to all of them should they decide that personally they want to wear them. We have hand sanitizer wipes and every other PPE available to all of them at the time that they're in there. Every employee of the sheriff's office for the past 2.5 weeks has their temperature taken when they arrive at work. Every inmate has their temperature taken daily. The ones in intake have it done twice daily. For the folks that come in for CAP, they are isolated in booking and stay in isolation until we know whether they're going to be remanded or released. And those folks are masked and gloved at all times as they deal with those people. So even the road patrol gets their temperature taken daily when they arrive at work or call in service. I get my temperature taken daily. I kid with them and I tell them we only bought thermometers that go to 99, but they're on to me with that. So we continue to do everything we can to be as safe as possible. Cider Creek delivered 2 cases of their homemade hand sanitizer, and the deputies have been using that. Works well, but it makes you smell like last night's hangover.
They drink it or put it on their hands?
that's why we give it to the deputies and don't put it in the jail. But, you know, we've been working with Tim and Darlene and doing everything we can to help on that end. And right now, knock on wood, we haven't had a fever higher than 99 in our facility.
Good. Sounds like you got it covered. Good job.
Well, the Sheriff's Association's been a big help in giving us guidance long before we got zero guidance from the state Commission of Correction. So as a group, we all arrived at a best practices and put those in place over 2 weeks ago.
Good job.
James, we'll move on to Nate. Are you there, Nate?
I am. Good morning, all. Okay, we have some reclassifications. I believe you all got the write-up from the sheriff on this. So if you have any questions, you can certainly feel free to ask him or I during this. First, we have, we want to reclassify a vacant senior criminal investigator position. It's a downgrade to a criminal investigator position.
Could I ask why the downgrade?
Certainly, it's that position was used to get the last person that held it has now retired, and we no longer utilize that position. That came from a sergeant's position before it was upgraded to senior investigator, and that's the whole purpose of the shift, is for the same amount of money or close to the same amount of money, we can have that supervisor back, but also get an additional investigator, which we never created with the COPE program, which we said we would.
Anybody want to make a motion to bring it on the table?
Horton, I'll make the motion.
Have a have a second?
Second, Tom Ryan.
Yeah, Sheriff?
Yeah.
In the email and everything and the presentation, it's talked about to bring us, that these are all things to bring us to the HOPE program. How's the other HOPE program been doing as far as the treatment half of it?
Can you restate that? You broke up halfway through.
I'm sorry. How is the other part of the COPE program, that is to say the treatment half of it, been working?
Up until a couple of weeks ago, it was working fantastic. We have Julie Haar comes in and classifies. We had another treatment provider that was in so that we had a full-time equivalent. About a month and a half ago, we had a meeting with OASIS to take one of our units that's vacant and set it up as an actual inpatient treatment facility for those in custody. So for example, the folks that are in drug court, they get sent away. We would be able to do those here between Prime Care and our addiction specialist. OASIS has since backed out on that, obviously, with the state budget as it is, and they have no money for that. My hopes was to get some funding through OASIS for the treatment end of that. So we're going to have to reattack it and look at it from a different perspective. But the treatment continues, and it continues on. Right now, all of our mental health is being done telemedicine-wise with the teleconferencing so that we don't have, so that we limit the amount of exposure we have to the virus coming in.
Do you know about how many inmates are in the program?
Typically, it's around 30.
Okay. Okay, thanks.
Yeah.
John, you're on mute. We didn't hear you. You're on mute again. Now you're back. Sounded good. You sounded good.
Well, okay. Anything else that we need to bring up on this? All in favor?
Aye.
Motion carried. Okay, next.
Okay, next we're asking for authorization to reclassify a currently encumbered deputy sheriff position to a deputy sheriff corporal position, and this is obviously for more supervision. I believe the sheriff can elaborate, but I believe we're missing supervision on one shift.
I think that was all stated in your paper you sent out.
Anybody have questions or?
This is Tom Ryan. Sheriff, I was looking at your information, and when, you know, what's the criteria besides time and grade moving on steps? Is there anything other than time and grade when you go from one step to the next step, pay grade?
No, it's completely contractual with time and service.
Okay.
In that grade.
Do I have a more
question?
Go ahead, Aaron.
Sure. When I've read through the letters, and I'm a little confused on some of it still. Basically, part of my understanding is that these positions that are being added between or reclassified, I know that there's two vacant positions that are being filled, and my understanding is that those are basically between the two part-time people and the senior investigator position being filled in order to make up for not having the two investigators that were part of the COPE program. But that those investigators were used as deputies before. And you know, I'm just wondering if this is consistent with whatever was said when the deputies were added. You know, if when they were added, if it was that, well, we're going to fill these two other positions and we're not going to be adding money right now, if it's basically if the two presentations are consistent is my question.
So realistically, we're right now dealing with A and B on your agenda. I think, Aaron, what you're referring to is C.
Well, I'm referring to A and C because that's how we get to the filling the COPE investigative positions is through the A and the C. It's kind of difficult to separate them out from the whole memo and everything, but.
Let's just take care of B first. That's the upgrade to a corporal from a deputy sheriff. So did I get a motion and a second on that? I think I did. Is there any additional discussion on? Okay, all those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Motion carried. So we'll deal with your question here, Aaron, right now when we deal with C. Okay. Okay, Nate.
Okay. All right. Looking to reclassify a vacant full-time correction officer position to two part-time criminal investigator positions.
Okay. So let me just, I got a couple things. One is that it in your statements you sat out there, James, and you're talking about losing one investigator in a police department. So where is that investigator? Is it in Corning or Hornell?
Corning.
Okay. So are we sitting out there? Are these people is the Corning Police Department going to hire another investigator?
That would be my understanding, but I don't have any say in that. This would be their current investigator is looking to retire.
So one of my problems here is, are we sitting out there now supplementing by increasing the number of investigators? Are we sitting out there supplementing the Corning Police Department? And I think we need to sit out there and make sure they're going to hire an investigator back.
I know that's their plans. I've had several discussions with Chief Spaulding regarding that, and he has no intention of not filling that position. This investigator has worked on the drug initiative for, I'm going to say, 15 plus years, and has traveled all over the county now in his role as a Corning Police Department investigator with one of our investigators. And Corning has allowed him, they've made arrests and search warrants in Cohocton, Wayland, Canastillo, Hornell, Pulteney, you name it. And they've let him do that. So I think we're ahead of the curve on it already.
My other.
And all this is Nate. I've had multiple conversations with Chief Spaulding as well. And all indications would point to that he is looking to hire an investigator. You know, we're up in the air right now with testing. Those tests are usually held in June. But I believe from my conversations with him that he is looking to hire one.
Okay. Sheriff, let me ask. Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
Well, we're looking at using a position to create these other part-time investigators. Is this a position has now been vacant because of the lack of people in the jail? Or is this one that has been in the budget and funded but zero based?
This is one that's in the budget and funded, and the person is leaving it next Thursday.
Well, the problem is that if they change this whole Criminal Reform Act and we're getting more people in the jail, is this going to create a problem in next year's budget? Will we then have to put this position back in and fund it?
I don't foresee that. The only thing I've seen in the budget, there was a breakdown on what the governor has proposed in the budget. The only changes to the bail reform that I've seen is to add a few more crimes in, which would constitute being eligible for bail. Vehicular homicide, hate crimes, any assault or any other manslaughter. It doesn't give the power back to the judges. It doesn't give discretion back to the judges. That's the only thing that's been in his budget proposal so far, is to add a few more crimes to the list of those that are possible for bail.
I guess
there was nothing on discovery.
My other question is how many investigators do we now have that are working, and how many will we have once if we ratify these changes, are you going to have?
So currently we have a lieutenant in charge of investigations, and then we have 4 working investigators. We have 1 investigator who is assigned to DSS, who's been out on 207C for quite some time.
Okay, so that gives us 5 at this point. Are we looking at putting 3 more on full-time and another 2 part-time people? That would bring you up to 8?
Well, you can't count the 2 part-time. We also have 2 part-time investigators in DSS that are grant-funded. And the DSS position is also funded by DSS. So this would give us 1 additional full-time and the 2 additional part-time.
Sheriff, how much of the request for the part-time investigators is occasioned by Corning losing theirs?
It really doesn't affect that. What this does is makes it so that we can deploy a team to do a narcotics investigation, whether we have someone from Bath or someone from Hornell or someone from Corning available, or the DA's office. Right now we can't do that. We don't have enough people.
Jack, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
So what do you think about this?
So yeah, the sheriff and Chris and Nate and I talked after the budget was adopted, right around the first of the year. My opinion was utilizing a funded to be vacant position essentially makes this cost neutral. So that's why I personally would be in favor of it. I think, you know, the other things that came along with this, you know, kind of the 3-prong approach that the sheriff presented, I think makes a lot of sense. And because it essentially is budget neutral, I certainly support it.
Hey, Sheriff, are these going to be solely for narcotics investigations? Are they going to be doing other stuff too?
The 2 part-timer would be solely for narcotics. The additional investigator is going to be a general purpose investigator.
Anything else?
No, just my comment is I agree that the combination of these 3, as long as they are all basically budget neutral, it allows the sheriff to put people where he needs them, especially when we had a shift that didn't have a supervisor on. That was a concern. So I think all 3 of these are worth adopting.
Do I have a motion on this item, reclassification?
I'm Ryan, I'll move it.
Jeff Horton, I'll second.
Yep, for discussion. Any further?
This is Carol. I just have a question for the sheriff, if I could take a minute. I'm referring back to your CAP report dated January 15th and emailed it on the 25th. And I'm looking at the number of transports that you're showing. You said 135 for the city of Corning, 73 for Hornell, and then 869 returns. So my question is, are these returns linked to the city of Corning and the city of Hornell, or are they above and beyond those agreements?
Above and beyond those agreements. The returns are to every court in the county, every local court in the county. When a CAP arraignment happens, the original paperwork has to return to that court of jurisdiction for the next court date. And also there's several orders of protection, things of that nature that our folks are going out and serving that were issued in CAP court.
Okay, so the returns that are associated with Corning and Hornell, they're not included in the 135 and the 73 transports, correct?
Correct. Those transports are, we physically went to Corning PD or Hornell PD, brought a person from there that was under arrest to CAP for arraignment.
Okay, thank you.
Yep. Sheriff, I have one more question for you. With the additions of these investigators that you're asking for today, does that bring you up to where the plan was for the COPE?
Yes, I believe it does.
Okay, so that was, okay.
Anything else?
And I just want to thank you for listening to me, but the two part-timers, you can't overstate the importance of not losing that experience of 40 years of investigations between the two of them.
Call the question. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carried.
Thanks, James.
Thank you.
Heck, do you have anything else?
Nothing from me.
Any other business? Motion to adjourn.
Fred Potter, motion.
Second, Jeff Horton.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
We're adjourned. Thank you.